We will be doing some writing this morning, so there are sheets out here. It's not a writing with answers, but you may need some extra pieces of paper. Well, so again, this week we're working on experience and especially spiritual exercise. Not to discount the importance of our intellect as well. And so there are too many gospels for a week. So I am trying to distribute them. And today we'll be looking at the gospel of truth. Just a little bit of information first about the gospel of truth. The gospel of truth was found in the Nag Hammadi jar that we've alluded to during the week. This is a jar found in the desert of Egypt, in central Egypt, really just out in the desert. We think that it was put in the desert for some reason by monks who had built a monastery in the 4th century, about 4 miles from where the jar was found. And in the jar, of those 52, there are 2 copies of the Gospel of Truth. So, and they vary substantially. So there are 2 copies of truth, but they don't agree with each other all the time. In significant segments of it. So it's a little bit long and understudied, the Gospel of Truth. It's just really in the last 15 years getting any attention about what it might mean. At least inside historical and theological corners of discussion, it turns out that the Gospel of Truth was first very closely studied by psychologists. So it basically got more attention by psychologists and psychoanalysts at first than religious folks or Christians. A number of psychologists really were very interested in the Nag Hammadi finds, and indeed Carl Jung, one of the most famous psychologists, psychoanalysts of the 20th century, actually for some time owned the first copy of several of these documents. And he finally gave them back because they're all now back in Egypt at the National University. The Gospel of Truth was probably written in the 2nd century. It's hard to say when. It is a gospel, or it calls itself a gospel. We should take probably just a moment to think about that word. So gospel in Greek simply means good news. And it's not generally thought of as a book or a message, but just a word. Perhaps it's used very often as something that a messenger gives. And probably the first main use of the word gospel or good news in the first century was by the empire, the emperor, who Caesar Augustus announced when he had defeated the last enemies of the Roman Empire in actually the first, just before the first century BCE ended. He claimed that he had brought good news to everyone in the Mediterranean, because now it was safe. Well, safe was a really funny thing for the leader of the crucifiers and the enslavers to say. But that's so he would, and so it's almost certain, Hal said as he was lying, that the Christ movements used the word good news in response to Caesar Augustus. So, in other words, he said he brought good news to everybody in the world, meaning everybody in the Mediterranean, and they knew that was wrong, partly because their guy, Jesus, had been tortured to death by such an emperor. But partly because it was clear that the Roman Empire was not up to good for a lot of people that it had conquered. But, so when Paul, the writer of letters, he's the first one that we have in Christ groups that uses the word gospel or good news. And he there had to be using it ironically. In other words, not that he wasn't saying it was good news, but he knew that when he would say good news, everyone would think Caesar Augustus. Mm-hmm. So we always underestimate the humor in religious texts, because they get made holy in ways that they weren't written. So to call the gospel of truth or the gospel of Mark a good news, for the general public, that has irony and humor in it. So the gospel of truth is one of 22 gospels we know from the first two centuries. If any of you want to know more about those 22 gospels, there's a really wonderful book that's published widely by Robert Miller, and that book is called The Complete Gospels, and it has all 22 that we've known in there, if you want to have that in your collection. This gospel is probably the most lush, sensuous, and beautiful writing in all of the early Christ groups. It is, I'm really eager to hear how you receive it, because it just is not in the genre of gospel, because it's got so much good news. In other words, in most gospels, you've got Jesus dying and people being hurt, and sometimes being healed. This seems to be an overdose in terms of regular gospels of good news. So today in our spiritual exercise, I'll just ask you to see if you can stand still for so much good news. And so one of the disciplines, shall we say, of this spiritual exercise is that we just let beauty and truth and compassion and goodness just flow over us. So if in the middle of our work today you find that you've just had enough beauty and goodness, just notice that this is your discipline. Just say, well, Hal said this is my discipline, and I should try harder to let it all in. And so, yeah, it's funny, but it's really interesting that so much of our spiritual exercises and ways to do it have so much loss and hurt in them. So you know for me from yesterday how much I like Mark, because Mark never lets go of us thinking about, right alongside healing, loss and hurt. But the gospel today, the gospel of truth, does not do that. So the gospel of truth, I have not given you all of it, but what I have given you is two and a half page introduction to it by me in published form. And then our work for today will be off this one sheet that on one side has a bunch of text and on the other two others. I'll ask you not to turn the page at the moment, but just do on the big, the most texts. And I have taken these out as some of the ones that have been most looked at. So I'm thinking that it would be helpful first for you to simply take a 5 or 10 minutes to scan these six texts. They're all somewhat self-contained. And what you'll see is there's no story to them. And I want to reassure you that in the Gospel of Truth overall, there is no story. It's more like a book of poems, or maybe ecstatic sermons, or maybe a sort of a letter, but it never says, dear so-and-so. So this is not a story, but called a gospel. You may know that there are several other gospels that are also not stories. So just take a few minutes and have your writing instrument in hand if you want to just mark some things. Let yourself be curious, but mostly let yourself receive goodness. And then we'll go into a more specific exercise after that. But we'll take your first take on it. And if you, for instance, want to just stay with one of them, that's okay. Or if you want to scan the rest, then I'll break in about 5 minutes, and we'll talk a little bit. Well, I know there's more to ponder than I've given you time for. But let's just take a quick survey of maybe five of you who want to say the most attractive or most outrageous thing you've read.
Me?
I thought you were heading for it. Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is that there's so much familiar words within these that I've heard in other places, and that was kind of my aha.
Me? Most outrageous, most attractive.
The Father's children are his fragrance, yeah. For they are from the beauty of his face.
Yeah.
I've never heard anything like that in any other gospel.
Yeah, and that whole text is just, it turns out that it defines the relationship between God and people as fragrance sharing.
It feels to me like the kind of like the explanation of what does it mean, I am in you, you are in me.
Oh.
And here it tells me.
Yeah.
The story.
Yeah. Just lusciously. Many people have said this feels like at least the cousin, if not the sister, of the Gospel of John, in which is I'm in you and you're in me.
It feels like the sister or cousin of Buddha.
Aha! Uh-huh, wonderful. Uh-huh. Say a little bit more.
Well, in chapter 17 and 27, I just was reading it, and it just felt like it says, that's the way of those who hold something of immeasurable greatness from above.
Wonderful. I saw a hand back there.
Oh, yeah. I thought the first reading, or in chapter 4, sets the tone that this is special revelation. You know, those who have the hidden mystery, and those who it's been revealed to, those who ate came into being, and it's unknowable except for you. So it's kind of identifying all those who embrace this as being set apart.
Uh-huh, yeah. That's wonderfully haunted and interesting. Any other...
The mother language.
Yeah. The mother language.
Yeah, that we need to bring that out more. And
yeah. So a lot of times when I'm working on this with groups, they say, oh, that's probably what the contemporary translation did and shifted it around. So when we were working on these texts and we knew that this would be probably one of the widest access of the texts that there would be, we were very conservative on that, and we never made up something that wasn't there as far as we could tell. So this really is in the Coptic. And one of my favorite and completely, I'm not quite sure I get it, but in chapter 10, which ends with, it bears all things and chooses all things and it receives the face of all things and purifies them, bringing them back to the Father, to the Mother, Jesus of boundless sweetness. So as far as I follow that, and again, you need to know that the Coptic does not have any punctuation marks. So when Celine Lilly was working on this translation, we were just working really hard on that last phrase, because it looks to us like Jesus of boundless sweetness is the Mother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there are other ways of reading the Coptic. Some people say this is an implicit Trinity. Mm-hmm. It's fairly sure that the Trinity, first of all, in text, is a family picture that includes the Mother. There are just tons of early Christ texts that use the Father and the Mother as a unity of God.
And my hope, too, our church has moved in the direction with the Lord's Prayer, with our Creator, our Mother, our Father in Heaven.
Uh-huh.
And I wish more churches would move in that direction.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if Holden can move in that direction.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wish that more people knew the Gospel of Truth so they wouldn't have to make it up. Mm-hmm. They could just
right.
read it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In your research, is there a record of the arguments against this that kept it out of the canon?
There's one note, and it's in my introduction. I think it's Irenaeus from the end of the second century, And Irenaeus says it's made up. But one would agree, but that would that not, I mean, in other words, I think all Gospels are complete. none of them fell from heaven and hit us on the head. Okay, so just a couple of other things. Notice also, of course, that the father is a big deal and the mother is a big deal. And they don't seem, the text doesn't seem to be too interested in hooking them up. In other words, the one place I read that they're in the same place, but often it will be God featured as mother in one text or God featured as father in another text. You need to know that the beginning, the first chapter is full of the father. The last chapter tends to be more mother. Similarly, just to notice that second section of chapter 4, which there is some other treatment of the crucifixion in this text, that in the larger text that I don't give you. But if you look at 4 verse 5, he was nailed to a tree and became the fruit of the Father's knowledge. Mm-hmm. So that's the version of the crucifixion. Pretty far away from torture, right? Or a transmutation of what is seen as torture and crucifixion becomes, by the end of that sentence, a fruit that it tastes really good. And then one of the things that's so much like and Elena's, you reminded me of this. One of the things that is so stunning is if you ask what else needs to be done, by and large, in this text, the answer is nothing. Just breathe in the fragrance and you're good. But there is one section that has a little bit of ethics in it. Mm-hmm. Mostly this is about beauty and goodness. But there's a little bit, and that's 17. So I would call your attention to that. Speak of the day from above, which has no night, and of the perfect light that does not set. Well, that sounds like ordinary gospel of truth, right? But then, say then from the heart that you are the perfect day, and within you dwells the light that never ends. That's also relatively overwhelming in its affirmation. Then comes some instructions. Speak of the truth with those who seek it, and of knowledge with those who have sinned through their transgressions. Strengthen the feet of those who stumble, and stretch your hands to those who are weak. Feed those who are hungry, and give rest to the weary. Raise those who wish to arise, and awaken those who sleep. For you all are understanding drawn forth. If strength does these things, strength becomes stronger. So there's finally something, for those of you who are interested in doing something rather than just enjoying God's goodness. Here, you notice the final sort of working on, I might want to talk to people who want to do something. It's, so the rationale there, since you're already the perfect day, early on in that text, if you want to do something, that is the way to do that. Think about that is your strength, which is already there, becomes even stronger. So it's not like saving the world in the least, right? It's perfecting the world in God's already overwhelming goodness and beauty. So for a short spiritual exercise, I would like to invite you, just in your head or writing, whichever is best for you, I'd like to invite you to accept, let in, be overwhelmed by goodness and beauty in your life. So there are easy entries into that, since some of you are saying, I don't want to do that. Because, you know, there are other things going on in your life, but this wants to say, let it in. So easy ways in here today, right, is just notice all of the beauty that's been coming at you here. And see if you can just, in exercise, either by writing it down, what the beauty was, or by just breathing it in, just let it in. Similarly, the fragrance piece and a number of other images are stunningly physical. So I would invite you also to let in the goodness of your physicality, of the physicality around you. Similarly, but not exactly that. So when this text starts talking about relationships between people and God, or Jesus and God, or Jesus and people, the relationships are mostly simply about blessing and help and power and compassion. So a third way to start would be to look relationally through the lens of goodness and beauty and lushness. There's plenty more lushness and beauty and goodness out there, but those are three ways I would cite for you to begin. Just a little bit of receptivity on that. For some of you, it'll help to write it down. For some of you, it will impede you to write it down. So in other words, feeling the goodness and beauty and lushness may, the writing may get in the way, or it may help you. So just to acknowledge that. I'll call you back in less than 10 minutes for us to talk a bit more. And let's come back together. I think we have a bit of time for folks to say some things that went on in this exercise. I found in this kind of setting, it's fine for people to talk about how they couldn't do the exercise, or what was difficult about it, or some important things that came to them in it as well. So let's allow any open statements about in either of those directions, or complicated ways that both of those get complicated with one another. And those of you who know that what came to you is too intimate to say, just let yourself be in that silence and comfort or challenge. Yes.
What came to me most is strength. I often get asked how I stay positive, how I smile every day, all day long, how I am strong, and I don't look at myself as strong. I look at it as God gives me strength. Mm-hmm. It's God's strength, not my strength. I'm weak, He's strong, He gives me the strength. Mm-hmm. And that really sticks out in my life through all many trials and tribulations and hardships that I've gone through. And I never look back at any of it negatively. I think This is what helped me shape who I am, so I can use that to help other people.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how powerful that is for you. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that, of course, the source of such strength in the gospel of truth is the mother and the father. Mm-hmm. And the sweetness of Jesus. But it seems like also, this text does not necessarily entertain anyone's weakness.
No.
So that's a little, some of the same path and some different.
Yes. I got an okay from Beth to share that the first thing that came to her was humor.
That's exciting. Yeah, it's really kind of over the top, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've been, my whole life, I have this want things to smooth out. I want the ideal, you know. And the last couple of days, I've been thinking about writing something about edges. And so I wrote. I started the writing, and would you like me to read?
Please.
Edges.
If you bring, speak as loudly as you can. We got people upstairs. So.
I see edges, and they see me. Rough, torn, uneven, they irritate and annoy. But do they need to? Could edges be more than something to smooth out? Could there be beauty in edges? In edges there are minute possibilities of smoothness, hidden beauty. But if not, edges can motivate, urge one to grow.
Mm.
So, it's beginning.
Yeah.
I found myself thinking about the fragrance.
As loud as you can.
Yeah, I found myself thinking about the fragrance that was mentioned in this. I live in the Puget Sound where much of the time we get kind of a marine fishy smell, which I kind of like, and some people don't. It's kind of cleansing to me. But I noticed in particular last night, as we left the Vespers and I went to the movie, and then we left the movie kind of late, there is a different fragrance in the mountains here. There's a different fragrance than there is at the ocean. It was very distinct to me. And I just took a couple of really deep breaths and just, that felt cleansing to me also. It was a, this is just kind of a lovely way of describing the fragrance of God.
Oh, yeah. So isn't that wonderful that you were aware of different fragrances in different places in your life. So for the gospel of truth to talk about both humanity and divinity as fragrance,
yes.
Shared fragrance, and then you notice different, in other words, it looks like there's so much fullness in the gospel of truth. Here, you're discovering multiple fragrances.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just reminded of, my colleague Natalie Perkins and I went on a walk the other day, and she's, you know, this major musician, and as she was walking through the woods and the waters and everything like that up in Copper Basin, she started hearing different tones. So, in other words, she actually was able, in ways that I don't have a clue, is how she would stop and listen to everything and find a overarching tone. And she would go like a half a mile further, and then she would stop and hear another tone. So I'm noticing your fragrance and that tone just actually is another way, another non-visual way of tuning in, And smelling the fullness and the goodness. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking the olfactory sense is one of the first that we have, and one of the last we smell.
Ah. Yeah, and that the gospel of truth picks that out. I think that if I understand it, I think they say that it's also really close to our memories. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who was helping me with pastoral care about 20 years ago, and he was a chemist. And he went into a lab where they had various fragrances. And he said, would you go to the hospital and just ask people to smell this and then to tell them what, and to have them tell you what they remember. Mm-hmm. So that's another depth of goodness and beauty that I kind of just don't even remember is there.
Yeah, the fragrance is what stood out to me as well, and a really stark fragrance that I got the first day I arrived. It had rained, and I smelled the wet rock, and I'm not sure, but it was an identical smell that I smelled in Duluth and on the North Shore of Lake Superior where we lived for a while, and it was very evocative. And yeah, I think there's some scientific kind of reason for it, but the memory is, and the association is so joyful. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being receptive to what I said it would just wear you out with goodness. I just want to ask, can we all remember that in this session, some guy said, and I smelled the rock.
It's funny because I know somebody, the name of people that are wine tasters, and learned that they actually use rocks to really enhance their ability to taste differences. And I was like, really? You know, rocks? Because I love rocks. But when I learned that, it was like, I've started tasting rocks now.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. I mean, talk about the joy of something so simple. And trying to, okay, I know, let me do maybe tasting rocks.
Yeah, I also, on a speaking gig in Australia, they took me to a winery, and I was kind of clunky, but to spend an hour having them identify real tastes and odors and fragrances just shows the depth of things going on.
I'm a clay artist, and over the years, having gone through graduate school, and when we were in grad school, we talked about finding the zone where all the clutter around you sort of dissipates and disappears. And then as you're in your studio thinking about what you're making, you disappear too. And that is when you become like the conduit for God to come through you and let that creativity come out. Mm-hmm. And so when I think of fragrance, I think of breathing in the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Wonderful. And again, in chapter 19, the fragrance is portrayed, it's a fusing of humanity and divinity. That ebbs and flows. Actually, I didn't give you this later part, but the next part of the Gospel of Truth in chapter 19 has to do with sound, and temperature, and making one aware of the breadth of sound and temperature. Well, I want to problematize this just for a moment from inside the Gospel of Truth. And now you can turn that page over. So a number of my friends, and you have to realize that I've been teaching in New York City for the last 20 years, a number of them have complained a lot that I made them read the Gospel of Truth so much. Because they were gritty people, and I loved them for it. So they kept saying to me, where is an awareness of loss and crud in the Gospel of Truth? And so, they kind of led the charge there. And these are two things they found that I think they kind of made fun of, and they were kind of happy about. So in chapters 15 and 16, notice what's going on here. And there were many, and there was empty ignorance as if they were sleeping, and found themselves in disturbing dreams, running someplace or powerless while pursued, coming to blows or themselves beaten, falling from heights or flying through the air without wings, or sometimes as if people were trying to kill them or they killing their neighbors smeared with blood, until the time after having all these dreams they awaken. Those in the midst of all this confusion see nothing, for these things are nothing. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the depth of my New Yorker friends say, they're just avoiding it. And I want to just give them their day. Because I think the really amazing thing about them seeing this is how the Gospel of Truth gets to where the Gospel of Truth is, of this endless depth of goodness. It treats what it's looking at here in chapter 15 is what comes really close to what life in the Roman Empire was like for common people. Look at this. People coming to blows, or themselves beaten, or falling from heights, or flying without wings, or sometimes people trying to kill them, or they're killing their neighbors. So this is so close to so much of the violence that the people, the Christ people and everybody else experience. But this recognizes it, but says it's a dream. Now look on the next page, on 16. And I'll go through the last paragraph. He spoke, this is Jesus, spoke these new things while speaking what is in the Father's heart and brought out the faultless word. So in other words, that's what we get, right? All in this is the faultless word and everything from the Father's heart. When the light had spoken through his mouth and voice, which gave birth to life, he gave them thought and understanding, compassion and salvation, and the spirit of power in the Father's boundlessness and sweetness. Next verse. He did away with torture and torment, for they cause those needing compassion, those in transgression and bonds, to stray from his face. He discovered them with power and reproached them with knowledge. He became a way for those who strayed and knowledge for those who were ignorant. Discovery for those searching and strength for those who were shaken. purity for those who were defiled. So notice here, if you look at that litany of really terrible things that are happening, this is simply a way that's saying that the Father's sweetness and boundlessness is transposed by Jesus. And remember, twice in this text, they treat the crucifixion. But so the crucifixion here is a way to reclaim the fullness of sweetness.
The word dissolved is interesting.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way that the Father and Jesus do this is through dissolving and discovering and knowing. By the way, there is in the, you may have seen just a little hint of this in the text. Sin is never mentioned, but what is mentioned is the notion of what's called a transgression. Mm-hmm. And there, transgression is done away with through forgetting. So in other words, here, the transgression, again, dissolves in forgetfulness. So I needed to give my New Yorker friends and their intelligence a day in court. And to show how actually the grittiness gets acknowledged in, but as something that is already resolved in the presence of the fragrance. Anybody want to respond to that? Yes, please.
I just think, going back to 4 and verse 5, that in a way it talks about, to me, when they're mentioning the crucifixion and with the knowledge and the true knowledge, it goes back to Genesis and Christ being the anecdote for the fall. I just wonder.
Yeah, it's really interesting for me that Judaism doesn't see a fall at all in Genesis. And as Matthew Fox will say, that's mostly about original blessing. But yeah, I think there's some of that exactly in there. Let me leave you with, so chapter 10, which you have in your handout, chapter 10 is so full of lush goodness from God's wisdom and God's word that for me, I've never been able to figure out the grammar of half of the sentences. They just fall over each other.
It feels very poetic to me.
It doesn't
very
it?
Much like
it's
a poem.
Really poetic. So I wanted to just end in and forgive. I'll take it from 3 to through 6, just as an end reading. His manner has revealed it, meaning the joy, has revealed joy, and his rest has received joy. And this next phrase, I think, is amazing. His love made a body for joy, and his trust has embraced it. In this way, the word of the Father walks in creation as the fruit of his heart and the face of his love. It bears all things and chooses all things. It receives the face of all things and purifies them, bringing them back to the Father, to the Mother, Jesus of boundless sweetness. So if you haven't been overwhelmed by that, there you are. Thanks a lot. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.